passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello and welcome to Rewind to Raw. It is John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting here on Monday night, coming out of 3 hours of Raw on Evansville in Evansville, Indiana.
Yes, yes.
What sounds better? Holiday Monday, sit back, watch 3 hours of Raw from Evansville, Indiana. Sounds fun.
I mean, it could be worse. No, it can't.
I don't know. Nothing's coming to mind, but it was a show tonight.
I mean, you could be in a.
I'm in a bad mood. I'm just going to start off just with that. So it's going to reflect in my overall tone. But sometimes, yeah, you have.
Why
those types
are you
of days.
In a bad mood? What do you have to complain about?
I don't want to get into it. How are you?
Is it outside of wrestling or is it the wrestling that's got you in a bad mood?
It's not specific to Raw. It is work related, but it is not and nothing way related. But it is me related. Okay, I'm very upset with myself right now.
Do you want to talk about it?
No, I don't. I don't
really,
because this is a fresh wound that I'm not ready to deal with right now.
Okay. Well, whenever you're ready, you just let us know.
No. Yeah. How are you? How was your night? I hear fireworks. Wild scene in outside.
Yeah, a lot of fireworks. A lot of fireworks in my neighborhood. A lot of fireworks all day, including during the daytime.
Daytime fireworks? That's sort of oxymoron.
It's a waste of money is what it is. Yeah, my wife and I.
Who sets off fireworks outdoors?
Dude, I have no idea.
In the sun?
I don't know. But like my wife and I, like we took a walk earlier today out just in the neighborhood through some parks and just bang, bang, bang. And I mean, it was fireworks, everybody. Okay. Before you make any jokes.
It's a distinct sound. You know.
And like we see smoke and I don't get it. Like who can appreciate these fireworks, you know, when the light's still out. So
maybe it's for little kids that can't stay up late till when it's dark.
I suppose so. Like, is that,
it's like, what's the point at that point?
Is that worth it?
If I was like 6 years old and I'm watching this, I'd be like, what's the big deal about fireworks if I'm watching them? I'm not going to grow up to appreciate fireworks. Wait till I'm old enough.
They're totally overrated, like really. Yeah. And they're terrible for dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Bad probably for the environment, you know. I don't hate fireworks, okay? Like in special occasions, I think they should be limited to like, you know, like one communal blast of fireworks. Like it's like at this time, we all look up in the sky, we all enjoy the fireworks once, and that's it. You know, save it for
once
next
a year,
year
is good. We have this sandwich together in the middle where we're going to do this whole song and dance again in like 5 weeks for Canada Day.
Exactly. Like, do we need, why, like, does Queen Victoria really need fireworks? You know, come on. Once a year is fine. Canada
what
Day.
If we had different traditions instead of fireworks? Like, instead we like washed our cars during the day or something to show our love for the country.
Mandatory car wash? What if it rains that day?
Then you know what? That's nature celebrating.
See, I think that's a great idea. That's very productive, actually, because, you know, I mean, cars need washing. Yeah. Like, how about just like, you know, National Do Your Laundry Day? Like, instead of fireworks, let's just use our energy to do something productive, you know?
You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, my street, they tried to start this thing where it was like the first week of it and everyone's at home. So at 7 o'clock at night, they were all going to come out and everyone was going to sing.
What?
I think this lasted all of one time where they tried to get the like the street to like come out and like
what?
Sing.
What song?
They were like playing music. I shouldn't say singing, like singing along with like music that they were playing. Like
what kind of music? Like pop?
Do you think I took part in this? I was listening from my office here.
I'm just kind of curious, like what song would be known well enough that they could encourage a communal choir?
I can't remember. It's right at the beginning of the pandemic. You know what? I'm just, this is actually getting me out of my bad mood. Can I just go on a few segues here?
Please. Yes.
Okay. Of course. The other night I was going back to find the show you and I did with David Bixenspan right after the Dark Side episode. So that was May of 2020. Mm-hmm. And I'm scrolling back and just like, I never go back and listen to our shows, but I was very curious to go listen to the night of like that dynamite, the night when Rudy Gobert tests positive for COVID and everything is about to begin.
Mm-hmm. It's like Tom Hanks.
Yes, Tom Hanks, which you brought up. And we're talking about this like minutes after Dynamite ends. And dude, you like nailed pretty much. We're discussing like, you know, there's no way you can go forward with WrestleMania. And you're like, you know what? WWE is going to do shows no matter what. Unless the government actually stops them, like they will be the absolute last ones to stop. And you were dead on. You were dead on.
I appreciate the, I suppose the kudos there, but I mean, not exactly hard to predict. I think if you know the
sadly the practices no, I mean that company. I mean not the craziest forecast, but to listen to it, it was just interesting as well, just to hear
okay.
Like what's this going to be? And we're talking like man, there's already like 100 positive cases in the U.S. right now. It could grow. I mean, this could be several weeks, if not months.
Of, wow.
What's in store?
I mean, that was before so much, you know, that was like almost like an entire lifetime ago. Did you even have a mask back then?
On that day? No, yeah. No, definitely not.
Wow. I might have already had some just because like I mean, I think like in the Chinese community, at least it was already pretty big news, of course. So I think we were already preparing for it, but yeah, like that was the day when everything changed.
Yes. All right. That's
was
it.
That your segue? Like why the segue?
What was the segue?
Yeah. What was the point of that?
How did we get from fireworks?
There
was
idea.
Something in there that triggered that.
You
memory.
Said you wanted to go back and listen to the David Bixenspan interview.
Well, that's what got me going through back shows. And then when I'm in May of 2020, I scrolled back to March of 2020 and clicked on that show just to listen to it. I don't know.
So that was the segue for just to say you did that?
A tangent would be a better description of what I just did.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks.
Let's get into everything. We're just wasting time right now. I have things to deal with.
I think what you meant to say was you listened back to that interview because you had to prepare a little bit for an Owen Hart post-profile director's
That's right.
commentary show.
That's right. That's right. Last week, I said, hey, wait, there's a holiday on Monday. Should we do a new show? Or do you want to just throw on like the Owen documentary? We could run that. And Wei said, well, instead of taking the day off, how about we do a two-hour show instead? It's like, brilliant. Let's do that. So that is what we did on this holiday Monday. Wei and I sat down, and this is the first time since we released this that I have sat down and listened to this entire Owen Hart audio documentary from start to finish, which was featuring many of – oh, I look at that photo of me. Just I'm wonderful, wonderful shot.
What's wrong? Yes. What's wrong? You
nothing. I don't. Like I'm trying to imagine what I'm saying here. I've got like my hands up, like I've got that look on my face.
Well, you know, you two thumbnails. You know, they try to. I mean, we try to pick the most expressive, deep in thought type of conversation still shot. So that's what I was going for.
That was me about 35 minutes ago.
Anyway, yeah, it's up on YouTube right now.
That's my good mood evaporating from my body, as you can see it right there in the flesh.
Okay.
But nonetheless, we did a two-hour show today, a director's commentary version of the Owen Hart's Final Day audio documentary that was released in May of 2019, and a lot of great feedback to the show.
Yeah, so far. Thank you to everybody who took the time to join us this afternoon or is listening to it after the fact. The audio podcast is available to all patrons at postwrestlingcafe.com. Or if you're not a patron, just go to youtube.com/postwrestling. You can watch it for free. And we want to thank everybody who joined us live and actually sent a super chat or a super sticker. I'm not going to have a final tally of everything until probably like 24 hours from now. That's how long it takes YouTube to like convert everything basically to dollars. But at the end of all that, we will tally it up and John and I will match that donation amount. It'll all be sent to the Owen Hart Foundation. So all for a really good cause, I thought. And some really great information into the making of this documentary as well, John.
Yeah, I enjoyed doing it. It was a great idea that Way had. So thanks to everyone that joined us live or want to check it out after the fact. The video version is up on the YouTube channel, and you can also get the audio version of it if you are a Post Wrestling Cafe member. And what a week to be part of the Post Wrestling Cafe, because on Tuesday, Ask Away returns. The thread is up at forum.postwrestling.com, so you can still submit your questions. And for those that are double-double, ice cap, or espresso patrons, we will be doing this show live. And what does that give you access to on Tuesday, Way?
Well, live access, of course, right at 3 o'clock Eastern time. So after you listen to the post news update, maybe get yourself some lunch. Or maybe if you're in the middle of the workday, maybe actually do some work, you know, not that much, maybe just
taking some fireworks.
Why not? Some post, midday, daytime fireworks. Enjoy yourself. Have a great time. Annoy all the dogs out there. But then at 3 o'clock, if you're a double-double plus patron, you can join us live. You can even ask a question live by joining us on the live stream. So check that out tomorrow, 3 o'clock Eastern.
3 o'clock Eastern. Also this week, Bushby and Thompson's Wrestling Adventure will drop on Thursday. They're going back to Rev Pro and New Japan's Global War show from 2016, the second night, featuring Chris Hero against Katsuyori Shibata. And then everything leads to Sunday night. We will be live minutes after Double or Nothing. And it might be a very late night, but we will be live here on the YouTube channel and available to download by searching for Post Wrestling on your podcast app. Live reaction to Double or Nothing and taking your calls. So that's happening Sunday night. AEW, Sunday night.
Sunday night. Okay, I got to get that mixed up these days. But
AEW is not a – I am always unsure if it's the Saturday or the Sunday, but this is a Sunday night
paper. Sunday. Okay, one more quick plug here, and that is for Karen Peterson's show report that's right now up right now on the website, postwrestling.com, talking about the Hana Kimura Memorial Show. Bagus. Which I believe means great. Mm-hmm. Bagus. Yes. So there's a second annual Hana Kimura Memorial Show that went up today. I've started to watch it. Haven't watched it all yet. Maybe I'll talk a bit about it tomorrow on the post news update. I'll be joined by Kate from Montreal for that. But, you know, if you're going to watch it, I highly encourage that you watch along with Karen's report, because the commentary is only in Japanese. And there's so much that goes on the show that I think is reliant on, you know, somebody, a guide, you know, to help you assist knowing a lot of the background for what and a lot of the content that's being spoken here. So just wanted to promote that on the site right now.
Yes. Karen's also on the latest edition of Postmarks. Excellent conversation that David and Bruce had with Karen. And also the NWA podcast dropped over the weekend. They had some really great conversations on that show as well. So a lot of some quality stuff dropping over the weekend at postwrestling.com if you want to go check out all of that as well. Are you ready to chat about Raw from the Ford Center in Evansville, Indiana?
Sure, why not?
Well, we started off with a recap of the tag title unification on SmackDown, and out came a very solemn and somber Riddle, who came out by himself and is coming out with a very heavy heart, calling Randy Orton his best friend and his mentor. And there's an RK bro chant. He says the last few years have been really tough on Randy because of his back. It's been hurting him. He could barely walk before their match on Friday, but he made it to the ring and I guess lost.
Was this injury something that they had alluded to before?
No, never.
This is like really coming from out of nowhere, right? This like they didn't even attack his back in the post-match angle, did they?
No, as I recall, it was just like the steps or so. Like the big attack was on Riddle, like taking the splash. And it's Randy that's the one that's disappearing off TV from the injury angle. And Riddle is back wrestling so quick.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean,
to me, it was, I understand the need. Like it feels like they're going to Riddle first in this, you know, these dominoes of RK Bros that Reigns is going to stack, and you want to have the attention on Riddle, but at the same time, like, he was the victim of, like, the major angle, and Randy, you did not have that feeling. Like, you go off the air, and it's Riddle that's been destroyed the most of the two.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's sort of the feeling I left off on Friday with, that Riddle was going to be the one written off rather than Randy. But evidently, you know, some back injury that we didn't really know about until this point is keeping him away.
So he says that he got very heated the way that the Usos won, and he calls Reigns a tribal piece of trash, and he will get his vengeance on Reigns and the Usos and everyone in the bloodline. He is going to do this before his career is over. So he's giving himself a lot of time and latitude like that. Your revenge is coming. It might be now, it might be in 5 years, but it's coming. So he's given himself these are long-term plans to take down the bloodline.
I mean, you know, at this rate, like, I don't know how many chances he'll have with Roman. He's going to move to a reduced schedule over the summer, and then who knows what might be of his Hollywood career perhaps after this. So I think he's going to have to speed things up a little.
He looked straight into the camera, a rarity in these WWE interviews, and told Randy that he loved him and he's unsure about their future. And the segment ends with an RK-Bro chant. No interruption, no attack, just like a very kind of somber speech from Riddle, as it looks like Randy will be off for some time to sell this attack, and Riddle is going to be the focus, but definitely a much more serious version of Riddle that was presented here in the opening segment.
Absolutely, yeah. And I thought he sounded good, you know, speaking a bit more seriously. We're used to him playing the airhead, of course, of the group, and then making very dated weed references that...
Can't say that they smoked their ass.
Not today, no.
They got burned against the Usos.
Yes, they did, yeah. But, you know, I thought he sounded good being serious here. I thought he still had, like, a bit of his personality in there, but I thought at the same time showed some real good emotion here at the loss of his tag team, at his friend not being around here. So this seems to be at least a temporary... I mean, we had wondered forever, how are they going to end this run with the tag team, and does it end with a turn? And the answer is no, neither of them are turning. They're both still complete baby faces, but parting ways, seemingly, at least for the time being, as they go on to their singles directions, opening the door for a reunion in the future. And I like that.
Countdown clock is on. Tick-tock until Cody, who will be taking on The Miz at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, which everyone's going to make fun of this clock, but 2 weeks in, this thing has worked pretty well, where both weeks in the main demo, it's beaten the first hour of Raw.
Wow.
You still get the viewership drop in the third hour, but that's all 50 plus. All the other key demos, they're either staying equal or growing from the first to third hour. So, I mean, as long as
old people need their sleep, okay? They don't care how great the wrestling is, okay? They're not watching. I mean, they're not Cody fans, I suppose, you know? But young people, come on. That's we're willing to stay up forever.
They need to go have their American dreams.
That's it. Or nightmares.
The Usos and Sami Zayn taking on Riddle and the Street Profits. Riddle's ribs are taped up, and the Usos did a promo backstage with both sets of titles. Jay says that Orton isn't coming back after we bodied him, and they are introduced as the undisputed tag team champions. They fight at the entrance area, all six of them, and then we come back and the match begins. This was great. Riddle got to play both parts of RK-Bro in this match. He sold and sold and sold, and then he eventually tags in Ford, and then we built the match to the big Riddle hot tag to do all of the Randy spots. So Ford was in the middle for our second extended heat spot, and then it's Riddle coming in, and he's hitting exploders to Jimmy and Zayn, sentons. Ford hit a huge Topikon Hero onto both Usos, and it's Riddle with a draping DDT to Zayn. The crowd is amped, by the way, for this. He calls for the RKO, but the Usos pop onto the apron, distracting him, but then the Usos just bail, and they leave Sami Zayn, who eats an RKO, and Riddle pins Zayn and poses with the Street Profits.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a perfect ending, actually, you know? First of all, I love that they're continuing this Zayn bloodline thing. My favorite part of this match was not any one particular move. It was seeing Sami Zayn dance to the Usos theme.
Oh,
he walks out first, and he's on the ramp, and then like down since, and like Zayn is going wild. He's like the best hype man of all time. And then you have the two Usos coming out and being like, "What is up with this? With this dude?" It was the greatest thing ever. I love it. I love the fact that they are actually teaming up here. And I thought the ending was perfect because the Usos, in leaving the match and letting Zayn get beaten up and taking the finish, the Usos stay protected. Zayn keeps entertaining us as the lovable fool. And Riddle comes out with some great spotlight on him as a singles guy. So it looks like he's next in line. And I thought it was a good, positive week for that push.
If you're looking at Riddle as... You know, if we're looking at Money in the Bank as the likelihood of Roman's next title defense, I guess, does this give you optimism in terms of how they'll be promoting Riddle for this? Like, he's not going to be going in as kind of, you can't go in as kind of the goof sidekick. And it's going to be interesting to see how they utilize Riddle now that they're going to, I don't think they're going to go all the way and cut out the comedy of Riddle, but I think certainly you're going to get a different presentation over the next month and a half.
I think it's going to be very much, you know, like it's the Kurt Angle syndrome. Like when you see a guy in a comedic light for such a long time, can you turn him still into a main eventer? And I feel like they've had Riddle, like he's, no matter like how goofy he's been backstage, he's always been serious in ring. He's always been a really good competitor. And I mean, he's taken a lot of pinfalls for the team. But still, I think when he needs to be, the crowd can take him as a serious threat. And I thought today's promo was a good sign of his ability to be a serious, you know, likable babyface. So I have high hopes. And yeah, are we sure that it would even be a pay-per-view? Like, is there a chance that they might do it on TV? Because that's a long time to, you know, potentially keep Randy out. You know, when I guess Randy for SummerSlam? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I would look at those as the two shows and whichever way they go. I mean, you could always flip it around, but just based on tonight, it would look like it certainly sounds like Randy is not going to be back anytime soon the way they set this up. Like they gave him like a long term injury that he's been dealing with and a reason to be gone for longer than a week or two. Which certainly affects things. Like he has really risen to become like one of your key baby faces. Which is kind of why he's in this role. Like at the beginning of the year, I don't know how many people would be expecting Randy to be, you know, have the potential to be, you know, headlining a major show.
Do you think he'd be off house shows too?
Or Randy? Yeah. I mean, Randy's already on like some, like, the full-time, house show schedule, but yeah, that part will be interesting as well if he's off house shows too.
But, you know, you kind of have to argue that, I mean, Randy kind of has to be away in order for Riddle to really take that spotlight. Because otherwise, I mean, Orton would kind of overshadow him as a lead babyface.
Bobby Lashley and Omos, they announced that their third match in this thrilling trilogy will take place at Hell in a Cell. And Lashley comes out. He says him and Omos.
It would be the fourth match.
WrestleMania, Backlash. And
last week, the cage match.
The cage match, of course. Yeah. So it's the fourth match. Yeah.
What do you call like a fourth? Like it wouldn't be a rubber match. Like what would it be? Like a
quadrilogy?
A quadrilogy. Okay. That's it. That's it. This is not as cool sounding as a rubber match, you know?
No. This is a square match.
Square match. Yeah. Okay.
Lashley says they still have more to fight over, and Omos and MVP are out. MVP is going to file a complaint after last week. Lashley says a regular match just won't be enough, and he makes the challenge to face MVP tonight, and the winner gets to choose the stipulation for Hell in a Cell. MVP accepts this. He says he made Lashley, he will end Lashley. So Lashley then asks him, when was the last time you even won a match? And I was waiting for MVP to say, I'm waiting for our tag title match when we won the Turmoil last September, which was his last match.
I don't remember that.
Remember when they won the tag team Turmoil match? They were supposed to get title shots and they never got them. This was a whole episode of Raw they built around the tag team Turmoil, and Lashley and MVP ended up winning it at the end.
Your memory is incredible because there's no way. I don't remember Raw from 2 weeks ago.
And then they circle the ring and MVP gets knocked off the apron. Crowd got into this chanting for Bobby. I can't say I'm excited about another match between these two, but they are They're trying their best with this program, and the crowd was taking to it here.
They're realizing that Bobby Lashley is able to get matches out of Omos that no one else has been able to at this point. And if they want to showcase Omos at his best, while at the same time, I think continuing to push Bobby Lashley as, you know, an underdog babyface, you know, putting him in that role. There's no better opponent for these two.
And they should just do every pay-per-view together.
For a year.
Hell in a Cell. You know what? Still a bit more to fight over.
Yeah. Oh, they, like, dude, every match on this show was a rematch, man. Like, you have to get used to that if you're watching WWE these days. They run every feud to the ground. You know, by the time we're done with Becky and Asuka, by the time we're finally ready for Becky and Asuka on a pay-per-view, is there still going to be that much more interest? We've already seen it twice in 2 weeks. So it's just the nature of how they're doing these shows.
WWE is returning to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia on Saturday, November 5th for Crown Jewel. Dana Brooke is with Adam Pearce and says she wants Carmella. Becky bumps into her walking in, and that was all of Dana Brooke on this entire show. And Becky says that she complains about the loss to Asuka and wants it stricken from the record book and given the title match at Hell in a Cell. Pierce agrees to a rematch for tonight, and if you win, you will be added to Hell in a Cell. And this seemed like just you could seal what the outcome of this was going to be, because I think most people assumed that Asuka and Becky would have been together working, and now they need to change course and put these two into a title match.
You and I had wondered, you know, after they announced Asuka versus Belair last week, well, what would Becky's plans be? And I don't know why neither of us suggested her just simply being added to the three-way, unless you did, and I'm mistaken, John. But I didn't think of it. And honestly, it's as simple as that. You know, we don't have anybody else for Becky
just
Lynch.
Throw them into the match. Yeah, I was not surprised they did this at all.
I don't dislike it either. I mean, you know, the feud that you have been building all this time has been between Becky and Asuka. So you're able to continue that. You're able to add, you know, a lot more, I think, interest in it by having somebody the star power level of a Becky Lynch in there. And you're getting 2 weeks of main events on Raw as a result of it as well.
Right. The Judgment Day come out. Damian Priest thinks you people are sheep. No courage. Ripley talks, Edge then takes the microphone and says that Judgment Day is a physical and mental power. You can recreate and rewrite your career by joining us, and compares it to Tom Brady, Wayne Gretzky, or Michael Jordan offering an olive branch. He says, I wasn't handpicked.
What? He's saying, first of all, I don't watch football, but have like Gretzky or Jordan ever offered olive branches in their careers? Like what would that entail?
To me, it's like an olive branch is like, you know, you're extending.
It's like
you're bearing the hatchet. Truce. You know what I mean? This guy is like more recruiting people. I don't know if that's an olive branch. You're not. Yeah. Maybe he's mentally at odds with these young wrestlers who are losing their careers.
But have Jordan or Gretzky ever been known to be like recruiters? Like they're more the people that are getting recruited, or at least in Gretzky's case.
Well, I guess there's Marty McSorley in the locker room that can be Edge's enforcer. This promo
be Priest, yeah.
So he explains that he was never handpicked to be on top of the mountain like John Cena, but he is a miracle of his own hard work. And he says that his success was from hard work, which is something you people are afraid of because you're too lazy, eating Cheetos in your cubicle while their boss makes 10 times as much. You are sheeple. And I headbutted the glass ceiling. And then the crowd is chanting, you suck. And he asks, who is going to join us next? The hand of the humble deity is being extended. The hand of the humble deity.
That's way better than an olive branch.
Yes. Who will it be? Will Ciampa join us? Corey Graves? Alexa Bliss? Drew McIntyre? Liv Morgan? Finn Balor? Balor seemed the only one that they were curious about. And AJ Styles, who he says would be more healthy standing shoulder to shoulder with us rather than eye to eye and perhaps you could join us and your kids could refer to me as Uncle Edge. Uncle this is our Edge. Weekly debate about the Judgment Day. Way, was this a, how was this? And would this have been better backstage? Like I thought I gave extra points to for last week.
See, I didn't think it made much difference. But I will say, I mean, content-wise, this is still a group that I think is still really struggling to be more than just a generic, hey, we're evil, join us. Like, you know, sort of cult.
You fans are losers. Yeah. You're lazy.
Yeah. And I'm getting to the point where I'm worrying that Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest are both kind of being drowned in that same sort of, like, generic darkness that, you know, has been plaguing Edge since he's turned heel. And to me, it's actually kind of made Rhea Ripley a bit less interesting than what she was. And certainly Damian Priest, I mean, not to say he was doing great before this, but like at least compared to like the Bad Bunny run, he's far less interesting now than I think he was. But I actually felt like I got a bit of substance from Edge's promo this time around that I didn't necessarily get in the past. Like he's saying he's now kind of becoming more of like a motivational speaker gone wrong. Like an evil Tony Robbins type of thing. You know, he's saying most of us are afraid to win and work hard for what we want. Whereas, you know, he's worked for everything. He's not a John Cena who's given everything. He's worked hard to headbutt the glass ceiling and whatnot. And I can get into that. You know, I like the idea of like somebody yelling at somebody because we don't work hard enough. Sure. But it's being kind of like dressed in this whole darkness, you people, generic kind of hometown crowd booing type of shit, and it's making it maybe less interesting than perhaps what it could be.
Yeah, it's I'm not into this group at present. I feel that Edge is one person that to me did come off like a star in this company, and I think this has drastically brought him down. I see a lot of comparisons to when Daniel Bryan came out of retirement in 2018 and where he was 6 months later. And I would say he was more entertaining as like the environmentalist Daniel Bryan.
Way more. Yeah. Way more interesting of an angle.
More entertaining, yeah. But I would still say not being used to his potential during, including that run of what you had here, that Bryan Danielson had come back and this guy should be, you know, one of your top guys.
I feel like Edge has had more of a chance though. Like he's played the returning nostalgic sort of, no, I don't want to say nostalgic, but sort of like the, what is it, Rocky Balboa story of like, you know, somebody coming out of retirement and having that babyface run. He was that character for like a solid year and a half or 2 years even, wasn't he?
You can turn him, but to me, this feels like mid-card heel. And I think a lot of his star power has vanquished with this character for me. Mm-hmm. Like he feels like another person on the show to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that turns into a mixed tag match where it is Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley taking on AJ Styles and Liv Morgan, who are out. Morgan hits a dive onto Ripley and then a sliding knee from AJ. That sets up the commercial break. We see a Pele kick sending Priest off the apron. And then Morgan is tagged in with the Eradicator. And she hits the double knees off of the middle rope. But Edge places the boot of Ripley onto the rope and thus getting involved here, which prompts AJ to then go after Edge on the floor. We go to the ending and Liv sets up Ripley for the Oblivion, but again, Edge prevents the move from happening and Ripley is able to capitalize and pin Liv Morgan. Afterwards, Edge attacks Edge and Priest, but he's outnumbered and it leads to Edge hitting the spear with Damian doing the sweep with their double team maneuver and then Ripley laying out Liv Morgan with the Riptide. And all I could go back to is last week where AJ, Finn, and Liv made this solemn pact that we've got to operate in numbers so that we're not outnumbered. So to me, at the very least, give me some reason why Finn Balor is not coming to help these people. You just established like the reason AJ and Liv are together is this pact that they made 1 week ago. Just tell me, Finn's at home. Finn's sick. Finn's not in the building. Something. This is, to me, was such a giant hole here. These guys just got killed.
He's at home sorting his Lego collection. Yeah.
Give me anything. Sure.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought Bullet Club was for life, you know?
No, it was for a week.
Yeah. So no explanation. I mean, maybe the idea might, maybe, do you think it's to tease that he might be turning, joining the judgment.
He's already been fighting them for all these weeks. I mean, why would he turn so quickly after a week? After last week?
Maybe it was this promo that finally changed his mind.
Working against Los Lotharios, AJ. What am I doing with my career? Just hand me some Cheetos while you're at it.
He's reaching for the hand of the deity. What is it? The hand of the what?
The humbled hand of the deity.
The humbled hand of the deity.
What does that mean? What does a humbled hand mean? Like a hand that's been disgraced?
Like a lowered hand? Is that what that means? A hand descending from the heavens.
Let's move on. This doesn't deserve analysis.
Okay. You know, I
want to see AJ and Finn together. I thought they were a great team for the week that they lasted.
So, I mean, throwing in another member that they're continuing to tease here would really kind of throw these numbers out of whack, because right now they're perfectly set up for a 6-on-6 mixed match, which I thought was cool here, by the way. Like, I thought the mixed match building of both of these feuds really is flowing really smoothly. You know, it feels pretty cohesive despite these being men and women in different divisions. But like them adding another member, who do you think that is, first of all? Do you have any idea? And is it Finn Balor?
I'll say, like, if this group was, like, really hot, I'd be more intrigued by it. But I don't know. Just throwing another name at it to me is, like, is that going to help this? You could put Balor in this, but I'm not all that confident that that's, like, let's take another babyface and turn him. This is not a company that needs to be just snapping their fingers and eliminating babyfaces.
I mean, we kind of joked about this, but I think they could do something with, like, maybe the demon is in the group, but Balor is not.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, and then Priest can join the other group, too.
What is going on, Finn? I see that guy in that paint.
Yes.
Kevin Patrick is with The Miz. He is sick of Cody Rhodes, and he said that there is a lesson. Never trust a man with a neck tattoo. And says that Cody could not steal his spotlight before he left WWE. And now that he's back, his ego is out of control. He's got more pyro than the 4th of July. He also hates those fireworks.
Cody's been the one setting off all these fireworks in my neighborhood during the day.
He works in a plug that Miz and Mrs. is coming back in 2 weeks. And I don't need a countdown clock. Ooh.
So this clock is like, I mean, they're basically acknowledging on the show that it's a Cody thing. Like, it's made specifically for Cody.
Yes, this is Cody's gimmick, the clock. Yes. Right. So maybe we'll get Cody breaking down quarter hours within 3 months.
At this point, why not? Sure.
Come out here and this is a world of P2+, but in my 18 to 49 mind.
Wow, that's really good.
That would be an AEW Cody promo.
That's really good. I mean, we're almost there.
Yeah. Comes out with like the color-coded Showbuzz Daily shirt that reads Cody. Jerry Lawler, for whatever reason, was on the show to host the King's Court with Veer Mahan and do his best Madcap Moss impression. Veer will not answer his questions at the beginning. Lawler even notes his first question about the secret to his success. That was a dumb question. And then Lawler says, in regards to Ray and Dominic, he says, maybe it's something about what the Dominics have said about you. The Dominics. I love that name way more than the Mysterios.
Well, maybe there's more than one.
Could you imagine a world of multiple Dominics? They'd all come after me.
Yeah.
Lawler says what the Dominics have been saying about you backstage, that when you go to walk your dog, you're so hairy that they pet you, and that the Loch Ness monster takes a picture of him.
These jokes are just way funnier when you deliver them. Because like, when Lawler says them, I don't react at all, but when you say them, they're hilarious.
Veer takes the microphone and says he is not here to joke around. Ray is a legend, but he's too worried about his son. And it's made him weak. So he has come to take both of them out. And then Veer Mahan, our treacherous monster, begins sniffing Jerry Lawler. And he grabs him so hard by the hand that he drops the microphone. And Veer has to go physically pick up the microphone and put it back into Jerry's hand and say, I smell fear. Veer smells fear.
That's it.
And Lawler, in his scared state, responds, "I think it's just my cheap cologne." And Veer is about to show him who he is when the Dominics run down and attack Veer. And Veer takes Ray and goes to press him into the ring from the floor, but Ray bounces off the ropes and he has to shove him in there so gracefully. And then Ray and Dominic are repeatedly drop kicking him off the apron, but he never leaves his feet, but he won't get into the ring with Ray. And sadly, Corey Graves noted that this is not over between Veer and the Dominics.
Oh, no. No, it's just getting started.
Yes.
Well, I don't know about the idea of like having Jerry Lawler lead these segments, essentially making fun of Veer and not necessarily having Lawler back down at the end of it. Like,
I mean, what can you do with Jerry Lawler? Like, this to me was such a flawed segment that why do we need Jerry Lawler here to be?
I'll tell you what you could do with Jerry Lawler. The man can't take any bumps, at least not on this show.
No,
he could do it on his private time on some indie out there somewhere, but he can at least show fear. Okay, I hate the fact that
they rhyme.
His name is Veer, but he can at least
cower.
You're
right. You're right. They could have done something instead of like the wisecracks throughout this whole thing.
He's continuing to wisecrack the entire time, and it just, first of all, the joking nature of this shit doesn't help anyway when you're trying to promote somebody who's laughable enough as a gimmick on his own. And having Lawler, you know, the senior citizen, continuing to make fun of him even after the physical threat does not help at all. This is the type of gimmick that I think is always going to be a big risk. You know, it's very much on the same vein as an Umaga, where you're relying on a giant to play such a cartoonish, like, monster that audiences can either laugh at him, or in the case of Umaga, when somebody is as good as Umaga was and is as committed to the gimmick as Umaga was, the fans will get into it. And right now, I think the jury's still out on Veer, and I don't think today was helpful.
So what you're saying is Armando Estrada is the answer.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, you're talking about Veer having to speak on his own, and the choice of voice, there's another rhyme, was also interesting for Veer. Like, he spoke like in a very kind of unique, like, you know, breathy sort of way that was not, I think, something you would expect.
Yes. Yes. So you want to hear Veer.
Oh God, that name.
Yeah. This segment sucked, I thought. Schreiber's with Alexa Bliss, who says she's been having so much fun being myself here on Raw and staying out of trouble. She thinks Sonya Deville should seek therapy. It did wonders for her. And explains that her opponent tonight is Nikki A.S.H. We used to be best friends, but then we had a falling out. But it was all for the best, because now I'm best friends with a doll and she dresses up like a superhero. Because our characters are going nowhere.
Basically, yeah.
This was just such a what a backhanded indictment of your direction here for these two. Like, we had a thing going and then they broke us up and now we're both kind of in no man's land.
We're both incredibly weird. Yeah. With gimmicks nobody takes seriously.
I put everything into this Bray Wyatt character. He was let go and now I'm still stuck with this doll and I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I'm a different character, but I still have the doll. And my partner had a modicum of success last year, but that's out the window.
Mm-hmm. I believe this was Alexa's first real promo since her return 3 weeks ago. And if you're to, you know, have any sort of like sense of what direction they might be taking her, I don't think you really got it here. I mean, it was just more of a comment about how strange that they both are now. But we're at least getting a bit more focus. But I don't know. This whole Lily thing that they're continuing to keep around with her continues to be feels like they're not willing to, again, exactly for what you said, John, willing to part ways with the doll because maybe they would like selling the doll. But at the same time, like, not committing to the actual character either. So she's just kind of this weird halfway, half-assed, you know, mashup of who she used to be and who she used to be even before that.
Well, this is a weird match. Alexa Bliss against Nikki A.S.H. with Doudrop in the corner. So Nikki is re-entering the ring and executed like the weirdest looking, what was described as a double leg takedown, where it was just Alexa pretty much tripping to her back. Alexa came back with like going for a blockbuster. And then Corey explains that Alexa feels like she's in cruise control. She's not being aggressive enough. So Nikki sets up for a superplex, but then stops to pose to the crowd, is knocked down, and Alexa Bliss, while in cruise control, hits Twisted Bliss and pins Nikki. Saxton says that, well, she stepped up at least when it mattered. And Corey goes, I agree. It just didn't seem like the Alexa of old yet, as she leaves with Lily. I didn't know what was going on here. It was like the story from the announcers was that Alexa wasn't taking this seriously and then wins without any controversy. And the announcers almost seemed like, oh, okay, we just contradicted ourselves here. It was so odd.
I think we're looking at another trip to the psychiatrist's office. We need more sessions for this Alexa Bliss, clearly. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this character. I don't know if they know either. But they gave her the win here, and at least this week, as opposed to previous weeks where she really was just a background supporting character for Sonya Deville's storyline, this week they actually closed the segment by putting the camera on her, so it gives you some impression that they're working on some story with her. But I have no idea what it is, nor do I know how compelling it will be at this point.
Maybe Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop can start doing training vignettes for this upcoming tournament for the women's tag titles.
Are you kidding me? Like, you figure, how are they going to do this tag team tournament, first of all?
How few tag teams can you do a tournament with?
Four.
Okay. So they only have half of those.
They only have two teams?
I mean, who? Shayna and Natalya. Doudrop and Nikki. Yeah. I guess whatever you consider Carmel and Zelina, but they haven't been paired together in, like, what, since WrestleMania?
She's in the 24/7 division now. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where are your other women's teams? You're just going to have a bunch of makeshift teams, right?
Makeshift, yeah. I mean, who? Let's think about this. Who else is there? I guess, I don't know, Shotzi and Xia Li, maybe?
They've never teamed together, I don't think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about
makeshift. That's a makeshift team.
Shotzi and Aaliyah, okay? Great team right there.
Okay.
To the top, your next champion.
Shotzi and Aaliyah?
Well, they're not a team, I'm saying. But they're in backstage skits together, and that's almost good enough at this point.
But okay? She bullies her.
Well, come on. These teams never get along. Of course, that's just a natural way to, you know, build a lasting relationship as tag team champions. Who else we got?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Lasha and Rayomi, our new team.
Lasha and Rayomi. You think they do fake Scott Hall and fake Kevin Nash with Sasha and Naomi? That'd be great.
At this point, maybe.
And who'd play them? Like Lasha. Lasha should be Lash Legend.
Lash Legend would have to be Lasha. Lasha Legend. Take it to the bank.
And maybe like Dana. Dana could be Naomi. No, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, we should move on.
Feel the blow.
What? What?
I'm trying to think of a word that rhymes with glow that they can go with here.
I hope they go that route. That would be great.
Backstage, Kevin Patrick is with Seth Rollins. I mean, part of these characters to me that very much missed the mark is that I cannot relate to just about any of them. I think some of these heels, if they had any grievances that you could at least understand, okay, I can understand that. Like a friend turns on me. I can get in with that. I was mistreated by an employee. Seth, we are going into our third match with Cody Rhodes, Hell in a Cell. And his gripe is that the fans used to sing Seth's song, but now they chant Cody. Where is my countdown clock? Well, guess what? I've got my own clock. And guess what happens when it strikes zero? Probably the payoff that Y2K had. That's what I'm guessing. This is what you're supposed to be. Oh my God. When is the pay-per-view? Buy tickets now. What's going to happen when Seth's clock reaches zero because this is a man that wants a clock and he wants these fans singing his song.
There are a lot of promos that these wrestlers have to cut. Okay. There are a lot of promos that these writing teams have to write for these wrestlers week after week. You know, 3 hours is a lot of time. And I think they're just kind of, you know, digging for material. And this week, the material happens to be Cody has a new clock. How do we write a promo around it? And this is what you had here.
Cody's clock. Mm-hmm. Schreiber interviewed Asuka, who says Becky wasn't ready for Asuka. She was too busy crying and says Becky went to cry and got another match and she's going to turn her into big time baby tonight.
Yeah.
That's where, 50 plus was like, F this, I'm getting to bed.
You know, it's so interesting again, hearing somebody recap these promos because the Asuka promo is one that is 100% reliant on
all the delivery. 100%.
Content-wise, I mean, you are basically repeating the words of a five-year-old.
That's her character now. She mimics a five-year-old. Those are her promos.
Sure. But her delivery is so incredibly unique, and it's so incredibly captivating that it just works. It's incredibly fascinating to hear, like, the John Pollock version after the Asuka version.
Well, just before... your 65-year-old was about to turn the TV off. They give you Cody at 9:54 p.m. coming out 6 minutes early. Mm. So malfunctional clock and takes on The Miz. So I'm going to describe this match. Cody went for a bow and arrow, which Miz will be charitable and say he countered. This move just looked like it fell apart. So then Miz goes onto the turnbuckle. And he leaps off for a sunset flip, totally overshooting Cody, who just stands there and then rolls through with it. But there was enough that you could literally feel Cody's debate about whether I go and roll with this or not. Graves says maybe The Miz is second guessing himself and Cody's aura is affecting him. Like, is that the cause of this? So then Cody hits a boot. He comes off the top rope to the floor. Crowd is not all that into this match, but then they start to pick up as he begins to come back and then leaps to the second rope for the Cody cutter and nearly slips on this middle rope, but manages to hit the move, goes to a figure four, Miz to the rope, and then Cody climbs to the top and the crowd awakens. They're like, oh my God, this dude's going to jump off this turnbuckle. And just as they're finally interested in something, Seth runs down, shoving him off the turnbuckle for the DQ. And the crowd is upset at this. This to me was hands down the worst Cody match I've seen since his return to WWE. These two were so off in this match.
Mm. Admittedly, I didn't pick up on a lot of that nuance. Maybe because at this point, it's like I feel like I've seen this already. I mean, Cody has been back for what, like a month and a half, and he's already going through so many rematches. How many opponents has he had really in total?
Well, this was the not including house shows, but this is already the second with The Miz, and it just felt like the audience was on their hands for most of this, and I just thought they were very off, the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. There's a certain level of star attraction, I suppose, they feel like in this pairing. Did we get a third?
You still have another week before Hell in a Cell, and yeah. Cody's got one knee because the post-match attack saw the two of them attack. Seth fought Cody, and then it led to a chop block, and the two double-teamed Cody. So he's going into this match with a bad knee that they would establish later after he came out of the trainer's room.
And the big angle, I mean, if you want to call it that, is that Seth, on his way back up the ramp, grabbed Cody's weight training belt from a child that Cody had given it to at the start of the match. And he used that same weight training belt to whip Cody, which I love it whenever the heels do shit with the kids. Like, that to me is great. Like, the only thing I thought it was really missing here was the cutaway to the poor kid crying. And I mean, this must have been a kid.
I hope he got this weight belt back.
Well, he did. They showed that at the end.
Oh, he did get it?
Cody, like, you know, limping back from his injuries, gave the belt back to the child. And I think it's fun to do these angles, but so much of it, I think, is really reliant on the performance, or at least the natural reactions of the child. Not all of them can be Izzy, you know, in that Sasha Bailey match. This kid honestly didn't seem emotionally affected by it either way. Like, Seth took the belt I think the kid was just like, whatever. And then Cody gave it back to him and he's like, yay.
Cody, what the hell am I going to do with this weightlifting belt? Like, can I get an 8x10 t-shirt?
Yeah, like one of the gold belts, please. I never watched AEW. You
know, Cody needs to learn. Like, there's a reason Bret Hart gave away those glasses. No heel's going to attack him with those.
Oh, good point. Yeah. But I liked it. I liked the post-match angle here.
It was a good post-match angle. So hopefully that was the takeaway for people and not the actual match. Ezekiel and Chad Gable. Owens is out just screaming at Byron. Otis trips Ezekiel, and then Gable clips the knee and is torquing on it, hits a moonsault landing on Ezekiel's feet, and then Otis gets ejected. Owens runs into the ring and gets caught by the referee. He too gets tossed, and that allows Ezekiel to roll up Gable for the win and exit through the crowd, and Owens gets on the microphone. I don't care if you're Elias, if you're Ezekiel, or if you're Giuseppe. I'm challenging you to Hell in a Cell, and we have another match for June the 5th.
A third brother.
Giuseppe. Yes.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
If you told me the night after WrestleMania that they are going to hold off on this match from April the 4th until June the 5th, I would have been like, you're out of your goddamn mind. There is no way they can hold this off for 2 months, but it looks like they will do it before the Owens-Ezekiel showdown.
They have gotten a lot of mileage out of this Ezekiel Elias thing. And I mean, in ring, I don't know how excited I am, honestly, for an Elias or Ezekiel match. But as a character, I really do love this thing. And more so, I would say, for like some of the stuff that he's been doing online, like on their videos that they've been recording with him, where he cuts really fun, like, backstage promos. Like, Ezekiel, whatever you want to call him. Like, the man is really good comedically. And he'll, like, drop in references about how, like, this is my first time in this arena. I look forward to being out there for the first time in front of these crowds today. I remember when my brother was, like, he'll just get into a whole story, like, you know, talking about his brother. And he's really good at it. So some of the best stuff is just basically offline, basically, is what I'm trying to say with this character. And I get a real kick out of it. But
if they had this idea in mind for so long and could have set it up, this is the one match that would have been a great cinematic match where you could have both involved.
That would be great. Yeah, they should.
You could always still do stuff, but I mean, it would have required them, you know, shooting it when he was still Elias. Because that to me would have been the great payoff to all of this, is doing a scene where it's like you finally have the two of them together in a scene.
I mean, they could honestly still do it, like if they just did a Falls Count Anywhere match, you walk to the back, or like any backstage skit. Problem is, the guy doesn't have his beard, you know?
Well, that's the issue, yeah.
Be a really fake looking prosthetic. Anyway. What I think you're trying to say is, you know, we want to see something a bit clever with it, whether it be a camera trick or just some sort of like, I don't know, sort of creative allusions to this weird duality thing. I mean, man, we're talking about a lot of duality personalities here on this roster. You know, everybody's got a multiple personality.
Yeah. Maybe Ken Owens will show up in Chicago.
Kenneth yes.
Owens. Yeah. Cody comes out of the doctor's, the trainer's room, and his knee's banged up, but he's still got a heart and lungs. So that's good. He'll be, he says, Seth, it's creeping in that he could go 0-3 against Cody. I like the fact that they're introducing that part of it. Like, the idea of losing three matches to Cody is gonna, that's a point of the match, because it's so rare that we have someone win decisively in a feud that it will mean something, I feel, if Cody wins this. Or they're just going to have him beat Cody.
I mean, I'd say 0-2 is already pretty decisive. You know? Like, is 0-3 really
everything
better?
Best of seven. This is the season way.
I mean, best of seven would mean he would have to win four. So,
well, who says this is ending at Hell in a Cell? We still got money in the bank. I mean,
so we're looking for a clean sweep in a best of seven here.
Leave no doubt.
Right, sure. I think Cody continues to be cutting the best promos on the show. In the back here, like, this is like a really good, I think, fired up, angry backstage promo from Cody. And there are still continued callbacks to his AEW promos. Here, he dropped in the lines about how, you know, he went from being undesired to undeniable and now uncrowned. So we've got an extra un in there now added to
the three uns.
The three uns, yes. But I like these continued callbacks to his AEW tenure, because it really continues to feel like we are following the same narrative of one character from one universe into another. You know, this isn't a Cody variant that's just suddenly popping up in WWE. This is the same guy we knew from, you know, All In, or whatever you want to, you know, from ROH even, I suppose, all the way up until this point, which is really interesting.
Well, maybe Edge will recruit Stu Grayson to the Judgment Day.
And we'll see, I mean,
we'll see him jump universes.
I don't think that's happening for a second.
No?
I mean, if he's above the age of 30 and he's not a college, you know, sports athlete, I don't see it happening.
From there, we have the Lashley MVP match where MVP fakes a knee injury, allowing Omos to attack Lashley, and MVP drills him with a boot, which got a reference by Corey Graves of Mr. Chono.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And MVP's yelling, "I made you," but then is hit with a flatliner, and there's a clothesline sending him out of the ring, and MVP gets off the shoulders and is sent into the post by Lashley, but Omos comes and attacks Lashley. Lashley fights him off, but in the process, MVP gets into the ring and wins by countout. So Lashley is outsmarted this week after he sent his body through the steel cage last week and plummeted to the floor to outsmart Omos. And so MVP and Omos get to pick the stipulation, but they did not announce one yet.
I thought, you're right. I thought both weeks kind of didn't make Bobby Lashley look all that great. Like, they're trying to come up with what they are. They're really trying to think themselves out of giving either person a legitimate loss here. So last week, like, they didn't want to have Omos legitimately lose, so they did the whole cage door thing. This week, I mean, they had Omos cheat so that Lashley lost by countout. But, like, what also is weird is how after this match, the person whose music plays is the loser in Lashley. Not only that, you have Lashley. I mean, he puts the Hurt Lock on MVP, and then he starts celebrating. I'm like, what are you celebrating about? You just lost the match. You know, your big plan to, you know, put this match on so that you can get the stipulation. You failed. You're a failure, dude. What are you celebrating? And I think they didn't even announce the winner here to the live audience. So if you're watching this and you missed the countout, like, you would have no idea.
Because Bobby, he would have been done if they announced Omos as the winner. He would have been, you couldn't ever use this guy again.
So silly.
Like, can't lose.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know what stipulation this will be. Maybe it will be something fun.
Handicap, maybe. Probably.
Monster truck battle. I don't know.
Hmm.
Kobo Hall. Lacey Evans will be in action next week. And we go to the main event, Asuka against Becky Lynch with Bianca Belair ringside. Asuka goes into the post. We go to the break. Becky's in control. Asuka fights back, but then Becky runs into a code breaker. Asuka gets several near falls, applies the armbar, and then there's a superplex by Asuka and misses with the hip attack. And Becky applies the disarmer while in the ropes and then nails Becky with a hip attack, this time sending her to the floor. And Becky gets seated on top of Bianca Belair in her lap. And Asuka winds up for a kick. What could go wrong here? Everyone stay still. But then Becky moves. Wouldn't you know it? Asuka drills Belair with this head kick. And dude, Belair sold this like she was out cold. She just goes right down to the floor. They go back like a minute later and she is out, completely out from this, selling it.
It was like a crow cop knockout.
Yes. Yeah. This was left kick hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, Asuka gets nailed by Becky, and then Asuka has to beat the count into the ring, and while doing so, gets covered by Becky Lynch. This was not the comedy that Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura was on SmackDown, but instead led to the ending. Becky pins Asuka, and Becky is now in the match at Hell in a Cell. We have a triple threat match. One of the announcers asks, what does this mean for Hell in a Cell? It means she's in the match. It's a three-way now. That's the answer. So don't have to don't have to go off the air with this cliffhanger.
Yeah. I thought for 2 weeks in a row we had like really good, you know, pretty high paced sprint like matchups here from Becky and Asuka. I thought it was thoroughly exciting and captivating, and I think their chemistry continues to really shine. And what seems to be, you know, a pretty, quickly put together main event feud.
Yeah, I mean they've had to obviously work from behind on this and go in a semi different direction. It seems like that, you know, Asuka and Becky were going to be programmed together, and now you're just merging it with, you know, Bianca Belair, who is without an opponent. So that part was fine. And at the end of this, after all that mocking of Becky crying, the last shot was Asuka in the ring crying. Did you notice?
I didn't notice the crying, but okay, no, that's irony right there.
I guess so. Raw, done. 3 hours.
All right. Good job. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was an okay Raw this week. You know, I thought you had a serious riddle, which I think gives you a clear direction about who Roman's next challenger might be. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting whenever it's a new person that we're seeing, you know, grow in as a character. And that's Riddle. What else we got here? Omos and Lashley, like, we're getting another rematch. Lashley looked kind of stupid coming out of it all, but
I'll say Cody and Seth, it feels like, you know, mocking aside for some of the promos on this show, but I mean, I think it's enough that you can headline this show with Hell in a Cell. But I would say for the second month in a row, this pay-per-view certainly feels like it is not a top priority.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, they rely too much on the Cell as a gimmick on its own without, I think, investing the proper time into a feud. I mean, Cody and Seth, I think, have had good matches, but I would say as a rivalry, I don't know how much I really buy into the two of them hating each other, especially when it's so one-sided in terms of like victories and defeats. So it's really just kind of like the garnish on top of this Cell, hoping to, you know, attract that extra level of interest there for you.
It's the time of the year, and it's like, okay, what's going to be in the Cell? This is the program we've got. You don't really have any other programs that are at that level.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course we have, what is it? Judgment Day, which I think we're in agreement that, you know, gimmick wise, promo wise, not very strong. But it's, you know, the match, whatever match they're building to should be okay. And, some weirdness with Alexa, and you know, there you go.
Only two non-finishes on tonight's show. We had
big improvement.
We had three DQs recently, only two tonight. So with the count out and a DQ. So there you go. Let's take some feedback.
Well, let's take some super chats actually, first of all, because we got some of them for our live viewers at youtube.com/postwrestling. Thank you guys for your support as always. First, we go to Daniel Morris, who sent 78 Hong Kong dollars, who says, thanks, guys. Both have a pick-me-up beverage of choice on me. Well, thank you so much, Daniel, all the way from Hong Kong.
Is that a drink the two of us can have for 78 Hong Kong dollars?
I mean, that's two drinks. I mean, if okay. I know my conversion all right, that's pretty much like, it feels like it might be like 10 bucks maybe. Maybe okay. Somewhere between seven and, I mean, depends on the
that's
type
a few
of
drinks.
Drink.
Yeah.
That's a couple drinks. I'll buy a Hong Kong milk tea with that. Thank you very much, Daniel. Matt Hahn sends $5. Thank you for the support, Matt. He says, fun fact about Seth, he hasn't won a televised match since February.
Televised match. Okay.
Well,
he's on quite the run.
Doesn't need to win. He's got that laugh.
That's it.
Okay. Feedback.
Let's go to the forum, forum.postwrestling.com. We start off here with Alexander from Portland. Tonight did a fine job of building up Hell in a Cell, but it sounded like everyone called it Hell in the Cell the whole night. Riddle and Reigns should be fantastic when it happens. And Lashley felt, I mean, what a nitpick.
No, I mean, it's, I would say it's throughout their history, it's been always somewhat interchangeable. I think like the first time Vince said it, didn't it used to be Hell in the Cell?
I don't know. But, you know, this is a company that's very on top of wording. So, I mean, it probably would be an issue. But, I mean, God forbid we said Hell in the Cell instead of Hell in a Cell.
It's Hell in a Cell.
That doesn't sound more ominous. Instead of saying, you know, it's going to be Hell in a Cell instead of Hell in the Cell. No, not the Cell. The Cell? The Cell. Yeah. Not just any Cell. The Cell.
Well, I'm a real stickler for this sort of stuff, you know, in titling. So, I can appreciate the nitpick, Alexander.
He goes on to say, Riddle and Reigns should be fantastic when it happens, and Lashley felt incredibly over too. Kevin Owens going from main eventing WrestleMania with Stone Cold to having a match at Hell in a Cell against Elias sounds like it would be a big demotion, but Kevin is carrying this program so well. The main event fell flat with me, but the Hell in a Cell card is looking stronger. Who do you see being the next feud for Omos? I could easily see Ezekiel sliding into that role.
I can't. I mean, I think even though we're seeing improvement from Omos, like, he needs somebody like who's a powerhouse, I think, you know, to have that type of match. Or like just a really great worker in general. Like, you know, even a smaller person. Has he feuded with the Mysterios or the Dominics yet?
No, that's the option.
Yeah.
That's a option. You know, different brands, but I mean, you know, you've got Drew McIntyre that's just floating around, and you've got to keep him busy.
So what, does he just beat Omos? Like, I feel like they're, you know, trying to have him ascend up the ranks, especially with MVP.
To what though? So, like, what are we building him up for? Like, we're building up Drew for a title match. We're not building up Omos for a title match.
How do you know? No, I guess you're right, because there's no title.
There's no title for him.
But a U.S. title.
Who's the U.S. champion? I say that honestly.
Theory.
You're right. He wasn't on the show tonight. Omos and Theory.
Not Omos and Theory. Theory might drop it to somebody else. And then
okay, put the U.S. title Omos on Omos. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Maybe Cody? Could we do Cody Omos?
I'd love to see
that. That match would be like, how good of a worker really is Cody at this point? You know, we'll have to see. That would be an Omos feud right there.
Yeah, give him that inverted superplex off the top.
I'm curious at the storytelling, especially like the promo battles, I think, between Cody and MVP would be really good.
It'd be very good with MVP and Cody. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. But Ezekiel, I don't think so. Like, I wonder how far they're going to take this Ezekiel thing, but you need somebody, if they're going to continue the threat of, is he really Elias? Like, you need somebody who's like Kevin Owens, who can kind of like play that somewhat comedic bent to him. And I don't think Omos is that person. Okay, we go to Roy from Rhode Island, who says, "Hi, guys. Regarding the story on the site over the weekend about FTR working a match with Flair this summer, quite apart from the medical side of things, it appears that Flair is on the same style of soft comeback that Hogan eventually came back on. Inspired by recent comments on various shows by people like Kate, Karen, and Nate, how are these guys and many others able to remain so Teflon ultimately? Wrestling has always been far from a squeaky clean business, but it's really dispiriting to see how little issues like racism or sexual harassment seem to prohibit careers in mainstream pro wrestling in 2022. Okay, so he means unclean, he means like soft comeback and Teflon, as in like their public image. Any thoughts, John?
I mean, I don't think it's a case of him being Teflon. I think there's a lot of people that have an aversion to Ric Flair. But there's others that, listen, this is just what it's going to come down to. There are some that are going to be viewed as huge stars, and their star power is going to trump whatever real life controversies are attached to them. I would attach Hogan to that as well. Like, there are people that will just look at a giant star, and that's what they see, and they can separate the two. But I would not say that is across the board for Hogan or for Flair.
Yeah, I mean, to this day, every time Hulk Hogan makes an appearance on one of these Saudi Arabia shows or whatever, like, you look at the timelines, you know, every mention of the Hulk Hogan is met with just constant mentions of his racism. And I imagine the same will be similar for Flair if he gets on a bigger stage, like a WWE. I think there's always going to be an independent wrestling show that's going to be out there that'll accept, you know, somebody like a Ric Flair. Or Hulk Hogan, or, you know, whoever, right? But I don't see AEW, like, going after him right now. I don't see WWE going after him right now. Doesn't mean in the future that won't happen. Yeah, also depends on just, I think, you know, depends on the star power, plus the severity of, I think, the allegation or the crime. And it's kind of different for everyone, is what I'm saying.
The last one is Jay from Colorado. What the heck was up with that main event finish? Asuka beat the 10 count just to run into the ring and lay face first. Really awkward finish, and I was surprised they even replayed it. It was awkward.
Yeah. I think they definitely, like, Becky could have at least used another move, you know, like hit the manhandle slam off of the ring or something. You're right. Yeah. I mean, she was tired, you know? You ever like try running, climbing up? Like, you ever try like getting yourself out of a pool by lifting yourself up? I mean, that's basically what it's like to climb back into the ring.
Have you ever kicked the wrong person in the head? That would weigh on you in the moment. Like, I just kicked someone that I respect greatly, and I just knocked – they are unconscious on the floor.
She lost via guilt? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. This was the guilt trip.
Ooh, wow. Becky winning via guilt trip. Okay.
Via conscience.
So
one was unconscious, and her conscience was also compromised.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was awkward for sure. And you're not the only person to point that out in the chat room here. You know, we had Ryan and Brian also pointing that out. So, yeah, maybe something got screwed up.
All right. That was Raw. Wei, what did you think of the Spanish Grand Prix on Sunday morning?
Oh, okay. The real main event.
Yes.
I thought it was a terrifically exciting race. And this was a track that I was warned by various pundits that is sort of known for shitty races, not much overtaking and just not very exciting action. But we got plenty of it from beginning to end.
Got the opposite in this. This was a very exciting race, especially the battle between Verstappen and George Russell, like midway through. Like I thought this race was going to ultimately, it looked like Leclerc was just going to run away with this thing. But in these races, you can then just like move on and get interested in like the battle for second or other kind of like mini head to head battles that are going on in this. And I thought, okay, the race for second is going to be pretty compelling. And then all of a sudden, like, what is it? Lap 27, Leclerc's done. And it was
engine
brand new race for all of these people. And like Verstappen, this guy, first of all, he spun him and Carlos Sainz. They both spun out of control on turn four, and they both rebounded. And I mean, had top four finishes at the end, but Verstappen ultimately won the race. So I thought this was like a really exciting race for the hour and a half. I was glued to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tire strategy, I mean, as always, seems to be like this is the level that I guess like. You never know. I would never know, like being a casual fan, a novice fan, how much tires matter and how much strategy goes into how many times you change tires, what tires you use, and whether or not you keep tires on because, of course, it's the exchange.
I don't care what anyone says. I love this stuff. Like, I find this is I am compelled by that, the strategic aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I love the dynamic. And we had it here with the two Red Bull drivers of here you have like where it's pretty much like the team has to almost like have a strategy in place. Like, listen, and sometimes it's the number two driver. Like, you've got to ease up because we're playing a bigger game here and you winning this is not getting us there any quicker. It's amazing when you think about like the dynamics between the drivers and you've got like, you look at here like a 1-2 finish, but at the same time, like there's many people think like this was Sergio Perez's race.
Yeah, he led at one point, and I mean, through the radio, was told to give up the position to Verstappen. And I mean, we've seen this plenty of times. Like Netflix, seemingly, I think, loves this sort of storyline. Anytime the second driver has to, you know, give up a spot for the first driver, and I'm sure we'll see it documented and dramatized next season as well. But it's always interesting, you know, when you think like in what sport that is. I know these are teams, but like ultimately everybody's fighting for the top spot and everybody is ultra competitive and everybody's life goal is to win a race.
Yeah. And it's like, if you're the team, like what's more valued, like your driver winning the championship or your team winning like the point total. And like, to me, you ideally, like, do you want to have two drivers that are ultra competitive and could be like neck and neck with one another, or do you want a clear number one and a clear number two? Mm-hmm. And like the dynamics at play, that's where the Netflix series really gets into this. Like, you have 20 seats. These guys are ultra stressed by their performances. And in that rare chance you have to win a race, it might be pulled away from you because you are on a team, but it's not. This is still individual at different points too. I think it's such a compelling aspect to all of it.
The amount of egos that, you know, the sport seems to attract, and then the management of those egos is ultimately, I think, you know, at the core of what's so fascinating about this sport. We got to talk about some of these comebacks that we saw.
Oh, dude, this was a huge weekend for Mercedes.
Well, yes. First of all, it seems like they're porpoising issues seem to have been fixed, or maybe not completely. You know, they seem to indicate that they know what's wrong. They're on their way to getting things back in order, but they're not there yet. So we saw some good results here. I believe like I believe like Hamilton and Russell like qualified for third and fourth, right? P3, P4. Is that right?
Yeah. And for those that didn't watch the race, dude, Hamilton was like out of this thing immediately. Like, what was he? He was like last at an early point.
At the very bottom, I think, from like a tire puncture or something.
He was either 19th or 20th at one point. And he, like on the radio, like, dude, he's mentally done. Like, he's saying, let's preserve the engine. And that's not a flawed, he's looking at long term here. Like, let's not risk the engine here.
Monaco is next week.
They've got a race. This is not a 2 week gap. They have a 1 week gap between the next race. So that's a logical decision to make when you're in 19th or so. This dude is talked into continuing and fucking battles to finish fifth. He, to me, was like the driver of this race for that comeback. I thought that was incredible and greatly needed it. Like, this dude has just been shitting the bed this whole season.
Well, I mean, the car has, you know, like, and you can argue how much of it is up to Hamilton as well, because Russell has been doing better than him with that same vehicle. But yeah, hell of a comeback.
You have to be optimistic, though, based off of this performance from them. Like, this was a really good outing for them.
Yeah, Lewis ended up finishing, like, clawing back from 19 or 20 and then ended up at 1.4, you know, like, which is incredible. Ended up finishing five only because on the radio, they were telling him at this point to manage the cool down of the engine, because there was a risk of them not finishing the race altogether. So he had to back up to let Sainz up to four. But great performance for him, like motivationally. I'm sure he has to feel good. But I thought Fernando Alonso also had a great, you know, race as well, coming from 20 to finishing number 9 in a car that's not as good and not as competitive.
He's the oldest driver of everyone, correct?
I believe so.
I think he is.
So. I mean, we're talking about people that are like 20, like 22 here. So, yeah, I would assume so.
Did you hear anything about more about like Ferrari had to have been like the biggest
disappointment?
Disappointment that this race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Leclerc was driving great. I mean, but you know, I don't know what happened with their car. And I mean,
yeah, that's what I was curious about, if you had heard anything about what if they gave any kind of reason about what happened, because as Wei mentioned, like, they have to come back on like this weekend with
Sunday.
Another race.
Yeah, I haven't heard. I haven't really been reading up on it as closely as maybe some others. But I mean, Carlos Sainz finished fourth, you know, which is a good result. But I think like having qualified so high, like, what did he qualify? Three Spanish.
I don't have it in front of me.
Grand Prix qualifier. I just don't want to get it wrong, because I.
Sorry, who are you asking? I've got them in front
Carlos
of me.
Carlos Sainz.
Sainz qualified third, and he finished P4.
Yeah, so I think like, and if you're in a car like Ferrari, like, that has to be somewhat of a disappointment. Could have been worse, I guess.
So for the overall standings now, so because of this outcome, Verstappen is now number one with 110 points, and Leclerc with 104, obviously getting nothing on the weekend, and then Sergio Perez is third.
This is like a real review here. We're actually,
I was so into this on Sunday, and Wei and I are like texting back and forth during this. I was so excited by this race. It was a lot of fun to watch, and the early races, that's my jam. Like the one this weekend, I believe it's a 9 a.m. one, but the following week, Azerbaijan is the one I'm very looking forward to. 7:30 a.m. is my peak time on Sunday morning. I don't care. I'm up at 6:30 on Sunday mornings. So I watched this with my kids on Sunday. They lasted like at least 20 laps or so.
Really?
And I was left on my own. Max was really into it. He was like enjoying it and stuff. And was
is he following any particular team or car yet? Like, is he?
He was asking me how Canada's going to perform. And I said, well, there's two Canadian drivers. Don't have any optimism about them performing well at all. But yeah, he was kind of into it, and he said he'd watch it this Sunday with me too.
That's awesome.
How was the F1 party?
Well, I mean, when I say party, it was more of a get together with my wife's friends. So, you know, it was great. Like, I mean, it was honestly a little bit distracting from the race, but they had a great time. Like, it's fun.
You need to
it's
get those noise canceling headphones and just like get the feed in. You could get all the radio signals coming in.
That's it.
Have you ever delved into like the alternate like audio that TSN provides?
I have. Alternate audio? No, I didn't know that there was alternate
TSN
audio.
TSN puts all the radios up
really?
on, on the website.
Oh, that you can watch, listen live?
Yes.
Whoa, yeah, I had no clue.
If you go to like the same way you'd watch Rampage on TSN Direct, yeah, it's got all the different channels and you can just pick whichever car you want to listen to.
Right. Yeah. So I knew that you can get like the alternate camera feeds. I didn't know you can get the alternate audio as well. I have not done that.
Unless I'm confusing these two. I feel you can get double check me on that. But because I have not actually listened to them, but I was looking at all the different channels that they had on it. But it could be camera feeds.
I mean, whatever. Like somebody.
There are ways though to listen to the different radio feeds. I'm pretty sure.
Seems like it. Yeah, I listened to the compilations afterwards, like the highlights from the feeds that they put up on the F1 YouTube channel.
That's the way to do it. Like I've heard broadcasters that, you know, they're listening to all the radio signals like as the race is happening. I'm like, that sounds like madness. I don't even know how you could possibly
process
that.
Can you imagine if the WWE started doing this? Like they put out the gorilla feed, like the commentators here after every show.
I mean, there was a time when they were doing all the international broadcasts. Like, you could pick your different language on the show.
Well, I meant more like, you know, the coaching feeds. Like, I'd give anything to get a recording of, like, you know, Vince screaming into Michael Cole's ear. Like,
that's not what I said. Summarily and unprofessionally.
Yeah. Say the humbled hand of the deity. Like, that's
humbled
such a
hand. It's hell in a cell.
All right. We actually have a super chat here about F1. And this comes to us from Felipe from Chile, who sends 2,500 Chilean pesos. He says, in this season, personally, which driver are you rooting for? I go for Leclerc, Haas, Ricardo, and Hamilton as the underdog this season.
I'm always partial to Haas. I just finished watching Gunther's Choice on as part of season 3, which is what an episode where
Gunther's
they build a
choice.
This is Gunther's Choice.
Oh,
when
yes.
They're at the point where they have to make changes, and then it's the reveal that they're getting rid of not one but both their drivers.
Yes. Wonderful drama.
Oh, and he's the best. Like, he's so good.
I got to say, like, I mean, I was watching Drive to Survive just kind of like on my own, not realizing that it was just like that everybody else was watching it. And like, you would ask me like who I was cheering for. And I mentioned Gunther, and you too, like, became like, you're like, so of course, like you do some research afterwards and you realize once you're really kind of plugged into like the community, this guy is like the biggest star coming out of this show. So
I don't know how you could watch it and not. He's such a character that, I mean, he just jumps out at you. Like, they're, you know, Christian Horner and like Toto Wolff are like the real strategic guys, and they have like a certain charisma about them. But to me, no one touches Gunther. Like, he is just such a key part to the point that like they talk about like if Gene Haas would like drop this guy. It's almost like the Netflix series would be like, no, this guy has to be overseeing some team. We cannot lose him.
Oh, man.
He's on a team that is like not all that successful.
Even if he's not on a team, like the man has some sort of job, like a broadcast, like maybe doing interviews, like whatever. Like this guy, I think is set.
How about Lawrence Stroll? Are you a fan of him? The Canadian billionaire? Lance Stroll's father?
Lawrence Stroll. Yeah, I mean, I hate him. He's a great heel.
He's a great villain. Yes,
great
he's not
villain.
Featured too heavily, at least where I'm at. But the few times he has, I mean, it's like he's a great villain.
I mean, how could you not hate somebody? First of all, it's pretty tough to hate a Canadian, okay? But how could you not hate somebody who's paying for his son to be in the top racing league in the world? You know.
But that's a fascinating part about all the, like the Haas shakeup. It's like they go with two rookies, one because a sponsor is willing to front these millions of dollars.
A Russian oligarch, yes.
On the provision that they get a German driver, and it just so happens Mick Schumacher is available. And then they get
sponsor.
This other rookie that no one's heard of, and Gunther is just explaining, well, he's a rookie and may have some interesting sponsorship behind him as well. Like it's a pure money grab, like that, and that's what keeps the lights on for a Haas. So that is going to inform a ton of your driver decision making, is what a driver means financially for the team, even though it might not be the most talented driver.
No, and they're so transparent about it too. You know, it's not like it's being hidden at all. Like, drivers know that they're paid drivers. But I would say the difference with like Lance Stroll is I think he's at least shown competence. You know, he doesn't win races, but I think he's podiumed, and I think he's like actually like seems like a good driver. This dude, Nicholas Latifi, the other Canadian.
I don't know anything about him.
Whose dad is also mega, mega rich. Like, I didn't know there were so many rich Canadians. You know, I thought we're like a modestly kind of like, I don't know, country when it comes to like having millionaires. But evidently all our millionaires have children that are in F1. This guy sucks. He's just like, he's like dead last almost all the time. And really just kind of has his spot because, you know, dad's rich. So I have a recommendation just kind of on this note for, cause like, again, this is like old news to anybody who's like listening, who's like already an F1 fan. But like for me, like, and John, we're just discovering this. And so like, I'm basically like discovering sort of like, you know, what do you call that? Botchamanias of like, you know, F1, for instance. Like, and there's this great site called Sim Dane. I sent you a version of this before, but this guy does parody songs on YouTube.
I didn't watch it when you first sent it to me because I thought on season 3 that like there might be stuff in there I'm avoiding, but over the weekend I actually sat down and watched this. Oh my god, it was so good. My heart will grow Jean.
He wrote a song called "My Heart Will Grow Jean"
about it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, about Grosjean's exit from Haas, and oh goodness, like they're so
and it's
fucking
just mixed
good.
In with like Gunther's like best lines and losing his mind. There's no one that swears with such a artistic delivery like Gunther.
These are just incredible song parodies, just like of like F1 stories, and they're so fucking great. Like in Gunther's in like half of them, basically.
It's tremendous. Is there anyone you're rooting for? Way back to the original question.
I mean, I think I'm a Verstappen fan. I'm a Red Bull fan, you know? Like last well, I don't want to talk so much about, you know, the finale, but like I think I'm very much cheering for the Red Bulls. And somebody in the chat room here asks, well, first of all, a lot of you are F1 fans actually, and you're saying that Rustin says F1 TV Pro has all the feeds and the car radios. So I believe it's their own service that's $80 a year according to Brotano. Cool. So that's how you get all the audio feeds, it sounds like. And then this Rustin also asked, what did you guys think about the green Red Bull cans? Did you follow this drama?
I'm not familiar, no.
So you must have seen the episode already from Drive to Survive where...
I'm in the midst of the pink Mercedes controversy.
So
we've
there
just
you
gone
go.
Through that. Yes.
There you go. Racing Point seemingly showed up with the same design as the Mercedes from the previous year.
Yes.
And I'm looking at it, I'm like, what the fuck is the difference? Like, they all look the same to me. Like, I can't tell the difference between these cars. Now, like, I'm starting to. Like, once you really, like, are able to study the details, yeah. But we had a...
Oh, and there was, like, a complaint over the weekend, right? About...
yeah.
It sounds like it's... Like, if you worked at a previous, like, group or whatever, it's like, what you can... It's whether, like, physical, like... details and such were literally moved over. Like, it comes down to the definition of what is considered intellectual property. That seems to be you know, where it sounds like it's a very gray area of what is stealing versus what is, you know, if a mechanic that you have that has knowledge of what they can do. Like, it seems like it's a very gray area that some are able to get away with and others, like, you avoid kind of hitting that that alarm bell that's going to hit you.
Certainly, yeah. But, you know, at least cosmetically, I mean, it's so amusing kind of like, you know, seeing fans like make memes, like showing things side by side, and you're seeing exactly the same sort of like aerodynamics. And the team, by the way, is the same team, just rebranded this year. So now they're Aston Martin, but it's the same, like they were Racing Point in the past. And people were calling this the Green Bull because they were copying like the Red Bull.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And I think to almost like make fun of the or acknowledge it, like Red Bull supplied the Red Bull team with green canned Red Bulls.
I love it.
For the whole weekend. So yeah, I love this sort of shit, like the shit flinging, you know, that goes on.
Yeah, don't piss off Christian Horner. That guy will. He seems very litigious when it comes to any of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's Listen, you marry a Spice Girl, you probably pick up a few tricks for the media.
Well, this will conclude the F1 portion of Rewind to Raw.
We went like half an hour, I feel.
You know what? It was this was fun. So another race this Sunday. Any predictions this far out way? Do you think it's going to be a big weekend for Red Bull? Do you think that Ferrari is going to get back? I think Ferrari's in for another bad weekend. I don't think they're going to make much turnaround. Unless this was just like some weird hiccup that's not going to be a seismic issue for them. But man, after that, like how much can you do in a couple of days?
I mean, history dictates that, you know, Charles Leclerc doesn't necessarily have very good luck in his hometown. So, you know, he's already crashed once this year in that historic race. Maybe he hit the bad luck's out of him, but he's behind now in the overall standing. So, I mean, I think all eyes will be on him and seeing how he does.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Wei, this was fun.
Yeah, as always. I talked to you for like three and a half hours today.
I don't know how you do it.
You know what? I'm kicking you off. You're not joining me tomorrow for the post daily news update.
No. What am I going to do?
You're banned. Oh. I'm definitely suspending you until 3 o'clock, where you will join me for Ask Away. Yeah. Tomorrow, 1 p.m., I will be joined by Kate from Montreal. We're giving John just the afternoon off, but he will be, we're giving him a good part of the afternoon off.
Wei's letting me have lunch tomorrow. That's what he's letting me do.
And then he'll be joining me live 3 p.m. for all Double Double Plus patrons. And then available for all patrons in archive form afterwards for the latest edition of Ask Away. So get your questions in right now at form.postwrestling.com.
Yeah, post your questions before 3 p.m. Eastern time. And if you are a Double Double, Ice Cap, or Espresso patron, you can listen to the show live and even call in. We will be taking questions from you live as well. So that's Ask Away coming out Tuesday night for Cafe members. And that is going to wrap up Rewind to Raw. Good night.